This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 2981 for Monday, the 6th of January 2020. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for December 2019. And as part of the series HPR Community News, it is the 160th anniversary show of HPR volunteers and is about 78 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in December 2019.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. This is the community news show for December 2019. Joining me tonight is...
Hi, it's Dave Morris.
Hi Dave, how are you? Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you too. Yes, thank you very much. I'm fine. Yourself?
Yes, had a busy day, had a busy Christmas.
Good period, in parts, yes. As I say. Yeah. Okie doke. Yeah, it's New Year. It's all that good stuff. It's a got to remember to type 2020 instead of 2019 and all of these jolly things.
Exactly. Remember, anybody walking around this week asking what year it is are time travelers. Anyway, this is the HPR Community News Show, which is a monthly look at what's been going on in the HPR community. It's a regular show scheduled for the first Monday of the month. And just to tell you what HPR is, if this is your first time tuning in, HPR is an internet show podcast that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. HPR has a long lineage going back to Radio Freak America, Binary Revolution Radio, and Infonomicon. It is a direct continuation of Today with a Techie Radio, and please listen to Stank Dog's introduction for more information. The HPR community, what differentiates HPR from other podcasts is the shows are crowdsourced from the community, fellow listeners like you. There are no restrictions on how long the shows can be, nor on the topics they can cover, so long as they are not spam and are of interest to hackers. If you want to see a list of topics that have been covered so far, have a look in our archive, and you also allow for a series of shows so that hosts can give more details on a particular topic. You can download and listen to the shows on the website or subscribe using your favorite podcasting client to automatically get new shows as they are available. You can copy and redistribute the shows for free, provided you adhere to the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Free culture. Hacker Public Radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge. We do not accept donations, so please consider supporting our patrons. If you listen to HPR, we would love you to contribute one show a year. Our shows are by default released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 imported license. All the software we use is free software. All the code we develop is published on our GitLab repositories. All media is available via the feeds. We are going through an audit process to release the code for the website as well. Governance. HPR is entirely community driven. Policy decisions are proposed and discussed on the mailing list, which is open to anyone to join. Mail list discussions are brought to the attention of the listening community on the first Monday of the month in the HPR Community News Show, which is what you're listening to now. This show is open to anyone to participate in. The schedule for the Community News Show can be downloaded as an iCal calendar containing recording dates for the next 12 months. Thank you, Dave. A reminder is also sent out to the mailing lists in the week before the recording. Our hosting is kindly provided to us by Josh kidnap@anhonesthost.com, and he has the last word in issues related to site security. A changing team of volunteers called the admins or janitors of volunteers deal with the day-to-day operation of HPR. Right now you're listening to two of them, that's myself and Dave. Acting as the first point of contact, processing the shows, coordinating policy decisions, removing spam, updating the website, etc. They are contactable via the email account admin@hprhackerpublicradio.com. They have no more say over policy than anyone else. Anyone who has shown long-term dedication to the project and is trusted by the community can become an admin. See more information on the link. And furthermore, we would like you to please consider supporting josh@anhonesthost.com and also considering becoming a donator to archive.org, who provide hosting for HPR and many other shows. That, Dave, was the about.php page, which has come to my attention. Nobody bothers to read, folks. Everybody needs to know this one. So, as the first show of the year, that is our about page.
I recognized it. I knew what it was.
You would do, Dave, because you contributed to it. Now, why is that important, Dave? Because we have requested a policy change which we will talk about later on in this show, as a result of some naughty behavior. I don't want to make little of this. So people have been harassed. HPR hosts have been harassed, and this harassment has been brought to our attention via another podcast. Been in discussion with that person. And requested that the people come forward. They have not done so. They've only done so to the other host. And they have not come forward to me or you either, Dave. No. If there are people who have been harassed, who are HPR in any way related to HPR, or in any way harassed after posting shows here, that is definitely not what sharing knowledge is all about. Yeah, if you've got a problem, yeah, anyway, won't go into it. We'll cover it later on. But I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention that people might be under the impression that Dave and I run HPR, or we are just bash scripts waiting to happen. In your case, a Perl script, Dave. Yes, so with that in mind, we have the HPR community news with the view to giving positive and constructive feedback on every show that there has been in the last month. And we will start with the HPR community news for 2019, which was 2956. Shall we, Dave?
Well, before we do that, have we not got a new host to comment upon?
We should do that, Dave, because that is tradition. And it's tradition that you introduce them.
indeed. This is why I was poised waiting to do it. We have one new host this month, and it is Paul Quirk, who has already contributed several shows, some of which we'll be talking about as we go through this episode.
Excellent. Yes, thank you. And thanks, Paul, and welcome to the team. Actually, I've processed so many of Paul's shows now, I almost feel like he's one of the regulars. So yeah, Keep him coming, please do. Anyway, the community news, we only had one comment,
that was Jezra, and we were talking with Jeroen about the postcard request he'd had for his daughter, and Jeroen said, could it stop now, please? And Jezra says, no more postcards, tag nabbit, I just sent another one.
Excellent.
I'm sure it was appreciated, though.
Yes, indeed. Lord D's film reviews. This is Lost in Bronx, tribute to Lord D, and there were three comments, and I'll do the first one, which was from me. Great series, but hi Lost and B, great series, great episode and great series. Can I ask you to include the link of the next movie in the previous one, as it would be nice to have the ability to play along, just like they do on the HBR Book Club. Speaking of the HPR Book Club.
That's right. The Lost in Bronx says, links. I can do that, though it requires that I have the next one lined up in advance. That's a lot of organization. And of course, this is not an exclusive series. Anyone can post a review and do it in any way they like.
To which I replied, good point. That said, anyone planning an episode could add a comment to your episode or ping the mailing list. And that, of course, will qualify as I owe you a show. Speaking of the HBR Book Club.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
You've made the point.
For those of you who don't know about the HBR Book Club, there are several shows already recorded, and I think they're waiting on one that is on the failed hard disk to be recovered.
Oh, is that the problem? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Looking forward to that then at some point.
So the following day was 2958 to Kotorito with Haskell modules and how you define them and use them. They reminded me a little bit of the modules in Perl, I thought, when I was listening along.
Yes. Well, I guess in other languages as well, that whole business of defining a thing as a sort of blob of code and then using it elsewhere, and the various ways in which you can import stuff or make use of it, make it visible. So, it wasn't surprising, but it was interesting to see how it's done in Haskell. One of the few Haskell shows I've understood quite well.
And that's, in fairness, no fault of Tukatorito.
No, absolutely not. One day I shall understand it better.
And the following day was an interview with Josh Clemmings about gpodder.net. And do you want to read the comment? That was a show I did.
Yeah, it was a comment from Be Easy, who says, "No problem, I'll do it. Great show, Ken. I've been minimally involved in gpodder.net since Stefan first made his announcements. Actually, I was the one that put his original post on the Jupyter Broadcasting and Ubuntu Podcast Telegram channels. Ooh. I've been looking for a way to contribute more, and I think this show has provided me an answer. Data management stuff." Well, that would be easy's thing, of course.
That would be right up his alley.
That was my aside. Going back to the comment, I'm already on the Slack channel, so I'll contact them directly. So, yeah, very good. I'd like to hear how that all goes. Keep up the good work, he says. Oh, I missed that bit. I'd like to hear
There's
more.
There's only one reply to that, and that is... Excellent. That is exactly the sort of response that we want to get.
I'm just going to step away for a second because I've got a noisy cat. Excuse me.
No worries.
Okay.
So the following day was dehydrated foods, which, oddly enough, is something that my wife has been doing for the last 6 years or so.
Yeah, I find this fascinating. I do eat dehydrated foods, but I buy them. And I think what Ahuk is doing here is it's going to be a lot more cost effective. And of course, the reasoning behind it is very, very sound. So yeah, I think it's well worth doing. Go on.
It depends largely on the amount of fluid in the thing that you're trying to dry. So we were getting a lot of vegetables, at the end of the market, at the time when the market was closing, and then the just vegetable sellers want to get rid of the stuff, and then we'd freeze it at that point, or dehydrate it at that point. But it can take 2 or 3 days of constant working to do it, to get them dry.
Yeah.
And it stinks out the house a little bit as well. And I never actually, I have one of those power meter things just to see how much power it takes, much electricity it takes to do that. Of course, if you're running off your own solar panels, that wouldn't be as big an issue. But yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something I'd like to look into anyway. It's drying fruit and that type of stuff would be quite good. Although if you're diabetic like Hooker and I both are, then you got to watch it because you can eat a lot more fruit and therefore get a lot more sugar. Because they don't lose the sugar without realizing it if you go too far down that road. But it's a great idea.
Yeah, my wife is just more for having ready meals. That if you're making spaghetti or something, then you just have a jar of vegetables ready to rock and dump it in. All the chilies and stuff.
Yeah.
And then they expand themselves, and the only difference you can tell that they're dehydrated was, you know, that they're cut quite accurately, and as opposed to, you know, just chopped up and hacked in on the day. Here again, here's the show, you know, dehydrated foods, you know, you don't need to be a programmer or a you know, quantum physicist to publish shows of interest to hackers here.
Indeed not. No, this is all good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff, Daniel Pearson put in a very, very good little summary of Kubernetes, which I would like to put in a time capsule, send back 2 years and give to myself. That would be awesome.
Yes. This was very concentrated. It was like it was dehydrated information almost. It was, I found it fascinating, but it was one of those that I'd noted. Go and listen to it again several times because there's a lot of condensed information in there. But very well done.
Yep. It was good to have on there. And Brian in Ohio continues his bike building project the next day.
Takes me forever to scroll down. it was good. I enjoyed this. And I loved his pictures. The pictures make it really, really interesting, I think.
Yeah,
absolutely. A deep insight into all the bits and pieces and the components and the methods and stuff. So, yeah. So, shall I do the first comment?
Yeah, okay. Far ahead, yeah.
Petard says, I really enjoyed this. Thanks very much for making and posting this. I massively enjoyed listening, even if nearly everything about it is and will be out of reach for me for the foreseeable future. I'm a city creature and nothing resembling brazing is happening in any of my spaces anytime soon. I listened to this on my phone with only the benefit of the title on the screen and not the show notes. And I have to say, I was fully expecting that bespoke bike building was referring to a bespoke building to house bikes or a bike shed.
Classic.
That's lovely. I love those sorts of confusion. So yeah. Excellent response.
And John Culp, excellent progress. This is looking really good. I wish I'd known about the affordable touch you're using when I built mine. Torch. Yes, that's the one. Torch. Thank you, Dee. I would definitely have bought one and probably sped up my completion BC.
Because
I kept having to wait for our metal shop to open at the time I could go. It was especially nice to hear your reaction to learning how to braze weld, because as a novice, I went through the same series of emotions, kind of scared at first, completely stoked after a couple of successful joints. It's very empowering to learn something like this, isn't it? Looking forward to the next episode, as are we, John.
Yeah.
And the mistakes in that are mine, not John's.
Aye. Now, it never occurred to me to buy stuff to do brazing. It's a pretty hefty torch. It's one of the Burns-O-Matic ones, I think, that is very popular in the States. I've never seen it in the UK, but I'm sure there's an equivalent. I learned to braze at school. We had metalwork at school back in the 60s, and it was a gas and oxygen maybe type gun thing that was there. It's just something to get a mixture of gases to get the heat, I think, is the main issue. So yeah, very cool. I'm quite tempted to do something. I want to learn to weld as well, do full-blown welding at some stage, but I'm afraid I'd set my garage on fire. That's any trouble.
Start with the stick welding.
Yeah, that's what they say. I was going to go for MIG welding, to be honest, because it's cheap. I think it's easier to get the kit. But I've heard people say use stick welding teaches you better technique. Yeah.
And it also, it's after doing stick welding, MIG and TIG is a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, I see the stuff can be picked up relatively cheaply these days. So it's something. It's even in Lidl, the German supermarket, they sell these things. So something to do this year, I think.
Yep. Now, next show, a walk through my PyFace CAD Python Code Part 3. And this was a show from one of the series by Mr. X, who recorded a long show and basically split it up and went through his code. Great series. Just wanted to comment that this has been a great series. It's been fun to hear about all the ways that you've customized your podcast listening experience. At first, it sounded like we'd heard it all after you covered the hardware, but listening to the options you put in the menus, you've clearly got a lot more in there. My guess would be that you're not done either. Maybe you never will be, smiley face. Thanks for the show. Have always been a fan of your intro music.
That was Gabriel Eve and Fire. And Mr. X replies, really great series. Hi, Gabriel. Thanks for the nice comments. Glad you've enjoyed the series. I do very little hacking on this project these days, but I think you're right about it never being finished. Just the other day, I included a feature when downloading podcasts to include in the message how many podcasts were downloaded. Also glad you enjoyed the intro music. As I've probably already mentioned, it was something I pulled together many years ago using Cakewalk Studio, maybe version 4, and a Creative Labs Sound Blaster AWE32 sound card. I used a MIDI keyboard to pull it together. To be honest, it's been that long since I've played a keyboard, I'm not sure I still can. Anyway, thanks for taking the time to comment, and all the best, Mr. X.
Excellent.
Yeah. Now, go on.
No, Farhad.
I'm just going to remark that it has been quite a thing. It's it's something about certain people who go into enormous detail and build enormous complexity to do stuff.
Yeah. Special class of people who have Raspberry Pis monitoring the HPR feed.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but
it must be something in the water up there in Scotland, I reckon.
Probably.
Anyway. Following day, bolos and bow ties, neckwear for nerds. I talk about, this is John Culp, where he talks about ties, at least the kind I like to wear when the occasion calls for it. And I had no idea, well, actually, I commented. He questioned in the show whether it was of interest to hackers. Yes, it is of interest to hackers, because I did not know what a bolo was. Who is the guy modeling the ties? Because he looks like nothing like the John Culp in my head.
Yes.
And that refers to the images associated with the the show.
Yes, he's got some things that you can click on and follow. Yes, John Culp replies, the model, Ken. I know I don't sound so bald-headed on the radio. People are always surprised by this when we meet face to face.
That's not what I meant.
No. He has a sense of humor, just John. Oh, it's great. I found this quite interesting, actually. I'd heard of these ties. I mean, I've seen people wearing them too, but
the bolos ones.
The bolo, yeah. But I was thinking as John was talking about it, where does this bolo come from? So I did a search, and of course it's from Bolidora. From the Pampas of South America, where the gauchos use balls, 2 or 3 weights on string, on rope, to bring down the animals they're hunting. Ah. So it's based on that, basically a sort of blob on a string type of affair. So it's quite an interesting history.
No, I'd seen them a lot in the States when I was there, and but I'd never known what they were called. They're kind of cool because you can get all sorts of emblems and things on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm now considering wearing a bow tie, Dave. Who would have thought it?
Yes. The tying of it is going to be a great skill.
Yes.
It was common for kids of my age to wear bow ties when I was small, but they were always clip on ones. I had a wardrobe of clip on ones. I never learned how to do a proper bow tie. So you can do it. You'll have to do a show on it.
So speaking of getting people to do shows, instant feedback for students in maths. This is interview, or this is Benny, where I helped him submit his own show. on this piece of software that they're working on a website, and you commented.
Oh, I did, didn't I? Yeah. I was reading my notes here. Hi, Benny. Cool project, I said. I remember Maxima, the predecessor of, that was spelt differently, M-A-C-S-Y-M-A, the predecessor of Maxima, spelled M-A-X-I-M-A, which Benny's using, to receive and process algebra. I'm mathematically challenged, but I've spent a fair bit of my working life in IT writing glue code to make bits of software talk to one another. This sounds like quite an undertaking. Good luck with it. Very cool, actually.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with this.
He'd mentioned it at some point. I'd heard him say talking about it, but I hadn't really understood the ins and outs of it. So very, very good.
Yeah, cool. That was at Camp. Looking forward. Is he going to Foster?
Not that I know of.
The same.
Yeah, I know. It's he's never been to Foster in my knowledge, because, well, he used to be a maths teacher and it collided with his term times and stuff, whereas old camp didn't. But I'll maybe ask him if he's going. It'd be nice to meet up with him.
Yep. So the following day was the first show by Paul Quirk, and it was the World of Commodore 2019 Episode 1. I always like to see Episode 1 coming into a title, Dave, because you know what that means. More shows for us.
One of many.
John Culp says, Legacy Tech, thanks for the really interesting first episode. I don't have a history with Commodores apart from a 1981 novelty belt buckle with a PET computer on it, but it sounds like a fun event and I geek out on old technology. Thanks for including the pictures. Look forward to more episodes.
So I said, great show. Thanks for this, Paul. A great first show and some interesting interviews. I never owned a Commodore computer, but I worked in a university that had many of them. I remember visiting one of the engineering departments in the early 1980s, which had a lab full of Commodore PETs. I was impressed by the way the top of the case with the monitor attached would be lifted up, kept in position like working on the engine of a car. I bought a BBC model. They did that. They had a sort of hinge on the back. The whole top opened up. I bought a BBC Model B for my own use around that time. This was another 6502 based machine, which was very popular in the UK. And my workplace ended up with lots of these too. Looking forward to hearing your further episodes on this subject.
See what we're all doing there. Anyway, the following day was The Dude with his series on wrestling, As You Like It, episode 2. And this one, you ever listen to shows and you're back, and as I think of these, I'm back where I was listening to them at the time. And this one I was listening to the top of my in the attic, very cold attic, during a storm in my mother's house, connecting up her fiber internet connection to downstairs cable.
Yes, there's a strange association of this sort of thing. Bits of music with places and that type of thing, all sorts of audio. Yes, I do know what you mean.
So, this was actually a very interesting show. I really genuinely thought when he started off this series, I thought, okay, this is of interest to hackers. And now I find myself longing for the next episode to know when it's going to come in, because it's a fascinating insight. And B. Ronaldo says, WWE... Interesting info. I remember in the early 90s watching the WWF with my dad. Now I know why they changed the name to WWE. The panda won the fight. And if you don't know what that means, listen to the episode.
I do remember that. Yeah, the Worldwide Fund for Nature was very, very incensed that somebody was pinching their their name. I do remember that. But I'd forgotten completely about it. It's quite interesting to hear again.
And the next day, we had some old geezer waffling on about how he killed some birds.
Didn't kill many. Well, he died of natural causes, honest to God.
Not being fed. It's no natural cause, Dave. Anyway, so, this was by our esteemed host, Mr. David Morris. Anyone call you David?
I always called it when I was naughty at home as a child. So trying to avoid it as much as possible. You know how it is.
Yeah, tax man and your mother when she's annoyed with you. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Cannot fall on. Oh God, that's never good. Anyway. No, very interesting, and I like the way, as always, the show notes and stuff. I'm wondering how you're going to get from that to running HPR.
Yeah, it's a way to go, yeah. I'm going to have to speed these up.
Part 42.
I hit the doldrums for a while on doing this, because, as I said in the thing, I was trying to find research. I was trying to research things so I could point at pictures and references to stuff, and I couldn't find anything because, you know, it was that sort of dead time of the internet that people never bothered to upload, I guess. But
I find that even a lot of stuff that you think is permanent on the internet is gone. So that adage of nothing ever disappears on the internet, nothing you ever want to disappear disappears from the internet, but quite often the stuff that you don't want to disappear is gone.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
look who's just turned up, Dave.
I see. Yes. Hi, Gabriel.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Sorry I'm late. Misread the time. Thought I was joining early.
No worries. I completely forgot about it entirely. So I just happened to be at my PC, and Dave went, "Hey, we're starting now. I'll be there in a few minutes. I'm getting a cup of tea." What?
Uh-oh. Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not alone.
I don't know. What do I have to do? I mean, there's calendars everywhere.
Yeah,
there's...
I've added the calendar, Dave. But I'm going around all day thinking that it's Sunday for some strange reason.
This having Christmas and New Year in the middle of the week really messes you up, doesn't it? You don't know what day it is.
Oh, definitely. But, okay, now we're finally back to a weekend, so things should be regular from here on out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yes. I think we finished talking about that show, and I'm working on the next one, which hopefully will come out sometime in this year, if I can pull my finger out and get on with it.
So the next day, we're already up to 2969. Crewing a small spaceship in Haskell, something I never ever considered that you would need to do, but there you go. Every spaceship in a game needs a crew to operate. Smaller ships have fewer components, require less crew than a huge one with lots of components. This is fascinating stuff.
The detail that Turtle has gone into with this is just amazing. It's I'm in awe all the time with these things.
Yeah, definitely. It just adds this verisimilitude, right? It makes the world all that more real and engaging, definitely.
It makes me feel very guilty now if I look at a game and, you know, download it and go, not interesting, and just get rid of it. All the work that has gone into something like that.
Absolutely. Especially if it's written in Haskell, I guess. But just the whole process of thinking these things through and the interaction between the bits of it and so forth. It's amazing.
So the following day, Ahuka was back with a request, I think, for the Fediverse about social media and how it all connects together. And this was an interesting one on laying the groundwork for, you know, a social movement, I think.
I definitely it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward, hearing that you have these different social media groups that are sort of, they're not all agreeing on the same protocols. And so we want them, on the one hand, people want, want their data to be transportable, but on the other, how are we going to arrive at a consensus here? And is it just going to eventually, are we going to get a critical mass where everybody is just going to, okay, this has got to be it? Or are we going to end up with factions? We support this, or we support this, and then are they going to be glued together? It's going to be very interesting to watch.
I don't think actually they, in the floss arena, it's necessarily that cut and dry. In a proprietary world, perhaps, but, there's no reason why you can't support both protocols. Yeah, this is the protocol we'd like you to use because we need this functionality, but if you can't, then you can always use this additional one. So I think it's it's not something to be as worried about in the free open source software as it would be in other arenas.
Yeah, that's true. There's definitely more room for hope there. And, you know, I guess it'll all depend on, you know, which developers decide to, you know, to get off their butts and say, hey, you know what, this is worth doing, and make adaptions for their platform of choice.
I was impressed at how much work Ahuka had done to prepare for this, actually, because there's a lot of information here that I just knew that some of these things existed, but just it was just a list in my mind. He'd gone into a lot more detail than I had done myself. Found that to be really quite good, and some great links which I must follow up. I didn't know that Jabber had changed into I forgot what it changed to, but
XMPP
is it? Yeah, and yeah, it's being used in IoT. Did I get that right, or have I conflated things?
No, that's true. Yep.
So yeah, that is really interesting. I must dig around in that a bit more.
So the following day, we had the World of Commodore 2019 episode 2, Hacking Geck OS. And my first thoughts with this was, oh my god.
Yeah, ditto. Oh my gosh, you're going to try and run a multi-user operating system on that? Wow, this is going to be fun.
Yes, absolutely. Why says he spending all his days and nights doing this sort of stuff? So yeah,
I didn't quite catch, and maybe you guys did, but I mean, what is he writing this in? Is he porting it to every different assembly language? Because it's not like there are a lot of high level languages for the Commodore 64.
I don't know. I got the impression it was an assembler, but I don't actually know. Is it not specifically for the 6502 that he was building it?
I thought he ported it originally from a different platform.
Okay, I missed that then.
But I thought he had something like was it a PDP or originally, and then.
Oh, you were right. Actually, yes, you're right. He was saying that the PDP, which I guess we think is being fairly underpowered and inflexible these days, was its where it had come from. But it had a far richer instruction set than the 6502, and features like kernel level and user level and that type of thing. So yeah, I remember that now. So yeah, quite an achievement then.
Yeah, I guess it must have been a lot of code, I guess. But it's once you have the design, then maybe it's not so bad, as long as you know exactly what you know how you want the abstractions to sort of shape out. But still, it's quite a an endeavor.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a thing I would ever have considered doing. There was quite a lot of 6502 development when I was back in the sort of late 70s, early 80s type of time that I was sort of vaguely involved with. But these were just sort of standalone programs, effectively, that mainly for the BBC Micro and that type of thing. So the thought of a full operating system was not a thing that we considered at all.
Well, I will say one thing. I didn't, since I joined late, I didn't get to make the comment on the first one. But you know, he certainly sold me on wanting to go to this Commodore conference, because I certainly enjoyed that in years past, and it's been, you know, wonderful to hear about all the ways people are still involved with that piece of hardware and all of the, you know, its neat nuances and whatnot. So. Just have to figure out how to make time for it now.
I have a soft spot for Commodore. It was the first computer I've ever used. Yes. The following day, we had Mr. X and Dave Morris at the foot of a ski slope in Scotland. Didn't know you had that amount of snow, Dave.
No, it's one of these dry ski slope thingies.
Yeah,
sort of a giant carpet type of affair.
This is very much a sitting outside having a coffee with the lads type show.
Yes, that was great. Yes, it was. We sat in Studio C, as we call it, which was my car.
Oh, okay. Didn't realize that part.
I did a fair bit of work on the audio to try and remove the sound of the inside of the car type of thing. So might even do an HBR briefly on what I did to the audio to try and make it a little bit easier to listen to. So, but yeah, it's
okay. No spoilers for it. But which tools were you using?
Audacity.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, there's not a lot to say, but you know, 10-minute little show about what I did, just in case it would be helpful to anybody.
It probably would. When I'm doing my recordings, I always find filtering out the background noise to be a touchy thing, and so yeah, any tricks, I'd love to hear about that.
We could do with all sorts of stuff on this subject. Actually, I'm sure people have experiences that could be shared, which would be useful.
It was interesting that you had a Scion Series 5. I would genuinely have paid a lot of money for one of those.
Yeah. We had them at work. My boss, for some reason or other, decided that we all ought to have one, so we could, don't really know, trot them to meetings and that type of thing. It's a great, great device.
Keyboard, the whole design of the thing was fascinating. I really would love just a something Raspberry Pi powered type, you know, device with a keyboard like that and a screen big enough to play movies. You know, it's essentially a phone with a flip out keyboard. How difficult could it be nowadays?
Yeah, it's just not where the money is, I guess.
No comments on that episode, Dave.
We overwhelmed them with waffle, I guess.
I think people are probably backlogged with their shows. Or they couldn't understand your thick Scottish accent.
Yeah, mine particularly. Oh, hi there, you know, and all them sort of things. I actually sped mine up when I listened back to it. Through the normal course of events, and I was having slight difficulty catching everything, so it's probably because I'm getting deaf. But it was just a fun chat. Really, we'll do another one in a month or two, I guess. See if we have millions of things to talk about. Mr. Cool. X's podcast playing thing for one, of course.
So the following day, we had Introduction to Advent of Code by Daniel Pearsons. And I didn't even know this thing existed. Did you?
No, neither did I. This sounded fun. Sounded like I was like, oh, man, I'm missing out this year. I didn't know that they were doing this, man. Yeah. Should have told us about this a month ago. Oh, well.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yes. I think I'd have been stuck quite soon with it, but it would still be worth a shot. Yeah, I do follow a few other advent calendars. I have to admit that I do still follow the Pearl one, and that it's not a quiz, but it's lots of little ideas for doing tricky things throughout the advent period, and it's a fascinating source of information. I think there's one on Vim as well.
Really?
That was last year. I'm not sure if it's been running this year.
I'm totally missing out. I have no idea that there were, I didn't know this one existed. I didn't know this was a thing, that there are all these different countdowns to Christmas with involving geeky subjects. That's pretty cool.
There's probably others as well. If you went to look, you know, and they stay around forever effectively. So you can go back and look at the 2018 Pearl one, for example. And I'm not sure if there's Python and Ruby and those sorts of languages. That may well be worth going to double check, because it would be fun to read through them after the event.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Okay. It's good. Congratulations. Now we've got something else for me to get lost in on the internet for the next couple days. Great.
Oh, the internet is fun.
That's what the show is all about.
Yeah. But really, the puzzles that they were doing sounded fun. And I liked the way they were themed. And there was just, I'm just going to have to somehow make a mental note to watch out for it around next year.
Yeah, I need to assume that the current, the last one is still available. I was going to find it.
Okay, the following day we had the second part of NY Bill's setting up guitar, which I found interesting. And he has commented on the show because, hey, editing. I guess audio editing is a lot like proofreading text to me. I need to step away from it for a while or else I read right through my mistakes, reading what I meant, not what I wrote. When I mentioned SRV and putting heavy strings on an old telly, breaking the knot, they were a set of 12s. I kept saying 10s. 10s are usually run on the solid body guitars. I sometimes put 11s on hollow, semi-hollow type electrics. You won't hurt your guitar going from 9 to 10s, but 9s to 12s is a bit of a jump. By the way, I didn't end up putting 10s on this telly. I also pulled a bit more of the relief out of the neck, then checked the intonation again after. I've been playing the guitar ever since. I'm not sure how quick I'll be to give it away now. It's playing sweet. Wow. So that is a result there from that episode.
Yeah, I wasn't really up to speed with what he was doing there, but I had a chat with my son who recently bought a electric guitar. He's a classical guitar player from his degree, but and he was saying, oh no, I would never do that myself. I already sent mine away to get somebody, a professional person, to do it, you know. But so from his point of view, what NY Bill was doing was very impressive. And so I follow his view on this.
Yeah, I'm also coincidentally have a son who plays guitar, and but he's definitely on the younger end. And while he recently got a Christmas present of a book about guitars, including that had chapters on how to make and do and tune some of these things, aspects of it. And it was just interesting to see how these sort of harmonized, how the, you know, it's like, oh, I've heard this before. I've read this before. I've heard it, because now I've heard it from, heard it on the podcast. I was like, oh, how these things sort of suss out. I actually had some sense of what it was actually talking about. So they've been reinforcing each other, but I'm still definitely, you know, just sort of, it's like for hearing the lingo and the descriptions to me is still sort of like listening to the Haskell podcasts and going, okay, now how, what does this mean again? Okay, I have to go back and look it up. Oh, okay, there, now I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so, yeah. I do follow a guy on YouTube, a woodworker, who does make his own guitars, which he sells or gives away or whatever, and he's been challenging himself to make guitars out of all sorts of bizarre things, you know, like a hollow core door, for example, and you know, the sorts that's just full of things like egg boxes and those sorts of things. So you do get a little bit of an insight into what's involved there, but I would never want to take on a thing like the thing that NY Bill was doing.
So the following day, we had Simple Screen Recorder and Bit Cutter by myself. Two little useful tools that I came across, and I thought I would share them with you.
Very nice, very helpful. I liked the description, and it sounded exactly the kind of simple tools that I'd want to use. I am curious, what are you using it for? You didn't really mention just, oh, if you want to record your screen, but what are you doing with it?
Yes.
Everything?
No, there was a particular need that I needed it for.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll leave it at that then.
Yes, exactly.
I must admit, I've thought about doing screen recording for HBR shows, but then the end result is a video, isn't it? So that doesn't really sort of fit in with the HBR ethic all that much, but if I was going to do that, I would use something like this, I think.
I think the thing to do there would be, separate to these tools, would be to have to record the show first and then do the editing after. The audio would have to lead. I think a lot of people, when they're doing the movies, lead with the audio anyway, and then the video samples follow afterwards.
Yeah. Could be interesting.
The VidCutter one. Sorry?
It would be interesting to try. Yeah, go ahead.
So the simple screen recorder is for, you know, anything that you're that's on the screen you just want to make a recording of. For example, if you're on a web page and it's not the application's not behaving the way you expect it to behave, you can just make a recording of it. And then the VidCutter thing is just, you know, when you have a when you take a screenshot and you just want to crop it or rotate it or something, VidCutter is just that. It chops off the iframes at the nearest iframe and then chunks it together, and it doesn't re-encode or anything. It just reorders the video frames. It's very, very basic, but nice little tool.
I've recently been going through all my Vim plugins because I have lots, and they've just been thrown in. It's just a sort of a bundle of stuff, and I think there's potential for them to collide with one another. So I've been going through them, and as I was doing, I was thinking, oh, people might be interested in how you would use this thing where you can do stuff like take a word, take a sentence, take a paragraph and put things around it. But to describe such a thing is really hard without something visual. So, you know, those sorts of contexts where a video of the what the editor can do, I think might be quite interesting. But I don't know. I tried and failed at doing Vim episodes, so I don't know if I want to do that.
I wouldn't say failed. Come on.
Well, I ran out of steam, let's put it that way.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough on that.
It's there's so much to talk about that. But yeah.
Yeah, but I definitely agree with the struggle. On the one hand, you know, you're right, there are some times where it would just, you know, it would be just nice to show a snippet and a, or, you know, just a, even with command line things, just to be able to, you know, see what is happening as you are, you know, as you are doing X, Y, and Z. And, but on the other hand, you know, it's a podcast, it's audio, you know, you want, you know, if somebody riding in the car is just going to go, well, I can't see this. So, you know,
yeah, yep. Next, you know. Skip.
And
to
also,
next.
We have a lot of visually impaired people who get very annoyed with us very quickly. Well,
that's true too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, so maybe yeah. A supplementary of some video to say, you know, if you wish you could go and look at it in, and you have the capability, look at it here, but I'm going to try and describe it to you, something like that. Perhaps. Well,
there are some shows that definitely would benefit from it. The one that springs to mind is Klaatu's overview of Git, how to use Git with a post-it note. I visualized it in my head as he was doing that show, but that would be a very good one to have. Just Klaatu's show playing in the background, and then somebody physically doing what Klaatu is suggesting with the post-it notes and writing head on it and then putting it over and then putting them on the board and taking them down and doing what he is suggesting to do.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, those sorts of things could enhance stuff quite a lot, I think. So, yeah, something to think about.
So, let's move on. And the final in the episode of Pipe Face CAD code was part 4. So this is the last few bits and bobs in relation to that. And the next day we had episode 3, Life After Commodore, was a presentation by Dr. Richard Emmers, the author of Inside Commodore DOS. And this was very interesting on many levels, just a presentation you get.
Yeah, I found the color and the history of the time as interesting as he was describing it, as interesting as the, you know, main talk subject matter, I guess, you know, as in who owned rights to what. Oh, this person was exactly, you know, over here because of the Vietnam War, yada yada. It was fun to listen to.
Yeah, this sort of history is always fascinating, isn't it, especially when you can look back at it from a moderate distance and not be too involved with it, I guess. But this is a great series. I'm enjoying this a lot.
Is this the last one in the series, or is he going to do more? Do you know?
No, there's quite a few more that's stretching out. I think there's another 3 or 4, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I hadn't looked at the feed. Huh, great.
But it was the last one for this month, this year, and this century. Or that century. No, not century.
I think decade. You mean decade.
Yeah, thank you, yeah. So what's next, Dave? Comments that we didn't that were outside of the scope?
Yes, yes. So a comment came in last month, just as we were doing the show, that we didn't actually read.
Okay, do you want to do that?
So, yeah, sorry, I'm getting a slight cough here. So, yes, this was a comment to Hooker's show about LibreOffice Calc financial functions and stuff, and it originally come from Tim Timmy, who'd said he used it all the time. And this is a Hooker replying, saying, I'm really glad you found this useful. A fact not widely known in these parts is that I was once a financial manager, so I think my own experience factored into this. I love that these tutorials are still useful for people.
Yeah, and that is an excellent series. I still refer back to it when I'm approaching a topic again as a refresh.
Yeah, I know. I grabbed all of the examples and that sort of stuff and have them stashed away in my LibreOffice directory and stuff. So yeah, they occasionally get looked at when I'm struggling a bit.
And the show notes are actually quite good as well.
Yep, definitely. And yet again, an example, Ken, of what you always point out, how, you know, you can never judge the impact of a show right away. It may be much later before somebody says, oh, wow, that's awesome. And it really helps somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have
2014, that episode was back in.
Yeah. We have some other comments that were sent in this month to older shows. So shall I do this one? Because since I'm talking.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually you, Gabriel. Did you want to read it?
Oh, no. Since I'm not looking at it, I can't read it. Sorry.
You're not looking at the notes. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. So the future reference, the notes are always added to the show that's coming up on Monday. So to make it fairly easy to find, but now's not the time. So yeah, this was a comment on John Culp's show 2924 about hacking an alarm clock to make it quieter. And it was from Gabriel, who said, fun to listen to, as always. Nice show. Your DIY segments remind me that we don't have to accept things as they are and don't have to be afraid of trying to make them better. Thanks for the great show.
Yep, that says it all. I love those.
Yeah, John's quite a man of parts, isn't he? You'd think he'd be sort of a super academic, but he's prepared to turn his hand to just about everything, which is, I admire him for.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of devices in this world that have got beeping mechanisms I wouldn't mind putting a resistor on.
Yes, it should be a prerequisite for any child toy for children under age of 8, I think. There should be a potentiometer. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, all these comments are yours. So the next one is on Star Drifter RPG Play Part 10. Hi, Lost in Bronx. I just wanted to let you know that I really enjoy listening to the series. I'm a longtime RPG player. I did not know that. But can't say I've ever done a space opera game. This was really more due to the lack of friends with similar interests than the lack of interest on my part. While that land lack of hours in a day. Gabriel, what sort of comment is this?
I have no idea now.
You're doing this on purpose.
I must be.
It was fun to listen to and at times want to yell through the speakers, no, no, don't do this, which I agree with. I've also done. That included a few rule suggestions. I, like you, enjoy systems that can get out of the way, they can get out of the way of storytelling, though I still like some crunch to them. Anyway, thanks for the chance to listen to another foray into the Star Drifter universe.
Yeah, I enjoyed the whole process from the standpoint of, hey, it was like getting another free peep into one of his audiobooks at some level. But yeah.
And little tip, guys, if you go onto Patreon and throw him $1 a month, you will get access to Voice from the Void, which has got a series on different aspects of the Star Drifter universe, how the money works, how the different factions work, how space engines work, how different the super materials work. It is absolutely and totally awesome. Well worth $12 a year. Go do it. Go do it now.
Well, that's awesome. I didn't even know that was there. Cool.
Oh, it's classic.
Oh, got it. Okay. Another thing on my list now.
Dave?
So next we have a comment on HPR 2942, Why I Love Lisps by Neil Lazo, a new host. And it's from Gabriel Evenfire, who says, great first episode. Fantastic first episode. Delivery definitely didn't sound wooden. I love the Lisp family as well, but this episode was the first time I've heard someone talk about the unique power of REPLs in the development environment. My editors have always been very basic and never had the interpreters or had the interpreters embedded. I may have been missing out all this time, so thanks for showing something new to try out. And a REPL is a read, execute, run something else. You tell us what that stands for.
Yeah, read, execute, something, loop. I forget what the P is, but it's, you know, the idea that you write the code and then you run it immediately afterwards as, read, eval, print. Read, eval, print loop. That's what it is, because the print is printing out the output. Yeah.
It's the same as in Python and a few other languages, I guess.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the languages definitely have, you know, interactive environments. But what this episode was saying was that when development environments sort of and the language itself sort of support, you know, modifying the code on the fly as you're developing it and seeing the output live and interactive, it changes the way you do the development. And that's just something I'd never, you know, heard. Or tried playing with at that level. So more stuck in a traditional, okay, edit it, okay, now ready to compile, now to see what I did and yada, yada, yada. So that's what prompted the comment. I'm wondering, what I've been missing out on all this time. So,
good point. Do you want me to do the next one, 2944? This was Gabriel's show. Since it was a conversation he and I were having. So this is Gabriel's show on Onyx Basic Part 4, Network Flows and Connections, and I said I'd been playing around with the things that he'd prepared in that show, and was having great fun watching what was going on my network. And Gabriel says, glad you liked it. Hey, Dave, I've been behind in my listening too. Glad to hear that you like the scripts, and thanks for the feedback.
Yep, kind of weird to have my thank you that I wrote read back to me by the person I was thanking. But yeah, anyways, thank you for the feedback.
It's part of the fun, yes.
That's right. Okay.
Now, Mike B. Mike had a show on the Mimblewimble protocol, and Gabriel, is it Gabriel or Gabriel?
I guess it's...
Gabriel.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment that I'm definitely learning a lot from this series. While you've shown that there's a lot of detail to cover, you're doing it out in nice measures. Thanks, and keep it up, please. Cool.
And the last one of this batch is 2955 Machine Learning Data Analysis Basics by Daniel Person. Jerry K says, great, clear, and informational. Hi, Daniel. Many thanks for a great episode. I've been dabbling in numerical analysis in Python for a few weeks. I think this is an area I would like to explore next. We'll check out your YouTube for sure. Regards, Jerry.
That's it, isn't it, for the comments?
Tis, yes, all the comments.
We had a few comments. And then the thing I'm not looking forward to, the mailing list discussions.
Yeah.
So let's start with the nice ones first. Paul Quirk sends a heads up that he did the wrong intro and outro podcast music, but that's fine. So the next one, I will read verbatim from me to the mailing list. Hi all, I have had disturbing reports that multiple hosts have been harassed after posting shows to HPR. After further investigation, I have no reason to doubt that these reports are anything but genuine. This has been a bit of a shock to me, as HBR has always seemed like a well-regulated community. I, for one, don't condone harassment or offensive behavior, especially against people who have made an effort to contribute to the network. I believe that this is the view of the HPR community in general, but I would like your confirmation. Therefore, I would like to propose the following policy change to modify the about page, which I read earlier on. Hacker Public Radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge. To Hacker Public Radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge in a welcoming community that offers positive feedback and encourages respectful debate. I would appreciate your active response on this issue. And thankfully, a lot of people have commented on the thread, none of whom have. Well, it came as a surprise to basically everybody, but I have to assume that these issues are genuine. I have no reason to doubt them. As far as the person who reported them was concerned, they were happening after the people posted shows, and it happened to multiple hosts, and it happened on IRC, and they were being harassed on IRC, and they were being harassed in email, and he has seen some of the comments, and they were pretty vile. Now, I asked him to put the feeler out for anybody who this has happened to, and that they would contact me. Nobody has done so as yet, but as we mentioned earlier, people may be a little bit behind in their podcast listening. There have been a lot of responses. The one thing that I would like to mention is that this is not code of conduct in the typical sense, largely because we are HPR is in essence a upload mechanism. It's an RSS feed. There is no we don't look at the shows. We don't have any control over the shows. We don't know who the hosts are, other than an anonymous mail list, and even that, we have facility for people to drop in the shows. I do not know who is in the HPR community. I, you know, just found out John Culp has what John Culp looks like after many years. Many of my good friends, I didn't even know their real names until they passed away. So it's HPR as a community is quite large, but I will say that the reason for we're requesting the policy change is that it allows the janitors, Dave and I and everybody else, to go, well, you know, that's not what we're about here at HPR. We're about getting more shows. We're about sharing. That's why the HPR, this show that you're listening to now, why I proposed this many years ago when I took over the mantle here as the shepherd of HPR, I didn't feel that the hosts were getting enough feedback on the show, that people were enjoying their shows. And people today, especially Gabriel, I'm going to call you either Gabriel or Gabriel, so be prepared for it. I butcher people's names, that's what I do.
No problem, no problem.
I hope you don't feel.
I'm not taking any offense or harassment from this cop, from those slip ups. Don't worry.
Okay. And I also appreciate that perhaps I have annoyed people, or I have come across as maybe I've done something. And if that's the case, please contact Dave. And if you're not happy with anybody inside the HBR community, then please contact some other podcasters and they can get in touch with us and we can try and make it better. So, this is, long story short, I don't feel this is a code of conduct, because we can't enforce it. There's no way we can say, yeah, we can't enforce this. But what we can do is we can disassociate ourselves from it and say, well, that's not what we're about here, and make other people, make other podcasters aware that, look, that's not what we're about over here. The majority of people over here are not about that. And we also don't think that's cool. And if we happen to be in those same IRC channels that we talk, say, dude, you're not representing HPR here, let's be very clear about that. Okay, is that enough about that? Or, well, that's all I have to say about that, I think.
No, I think that's perfectly reasonable. It's certainly, I think that based on the email responses on the mailing list there that I think there was pretty wide consensus for everything you just said. So I just hope that as a community, we continue to, to speak up and encourage most of all, right? And especially when we see people, being knocked down. I hadn't seen any of this yet, and but if I do, I hope I have the gumption to stand up and say, look, hey, guys, this isn't cool. This isn't what this is about. And it goes for any of our contributors and listeners.
Yeah, I would agree with that very much, and agree with what Ken was saying. My view has been that HBR has been all along a supportive environment. I joined it looking for like-minded people and found them incredibly supportive, you know? So that seems to me to be the way it is and the way it should continue to be. So yeah, any deviation from that should be dissuaded as strongly as possible.
I mean, we have a history here, and there have been disagreements on different, concepts, ideas, or whatnot, and most of that has been handled, as far as I can tell, all of it's been handled, is with constructive, somebody posting a show and saying, well, I think it's this, or da-da-da-da. And, I've been impressed at, disagreements though there were, nobody's ever taken it personally or had a reason to. So it's just disappointing to hear that it sounds like somebody's just going out there to troll other people, and I can't fathom why, maybe I just don't want to, but it's just really sad to hear.
Yep. And apparently there were more than one person doing this, so. Yep. Anywho, yeah. I would just like, if there are people who, there are things that we can do as a community to basically, well, to stop it. We could modify the email addresses. That's always an option. And then we can always give you an alias. We can monitor that email address for you. We can do that sort of stuff. But if these guys or girls or whoever are chasing you down on IRC and in real life, like, that's just extremely uncool. Also, because it stops people contributing more shows to HPR, which is
clearly the number one sin.
Can you imagine, like, all the encouragement that we do to try and get people to step up to the plate and to press that record button, and how hard that is to submit a show the first time, to send it into us, and we have people who spend good money. We have Josh Knapp, who's there paying for the hosting for this thing out of his pocket because he believes this. You got the rest of us paying for domains and servers and mumble servers and stuff, paying for all the people who paid for swag at conferences, the people who give up their time to go to conferences, the people who give up their time to respond to people's emails and have polite discussions on the mailing thread. And to find that somebody would consider that HPR, this sort of stuff, is what HPR is about, is just irritating to me. Just a waste. That, it, for a start, is rude. Yeah, it's not cool. But for secondly, go to all this trouble to encourage people to submit shows, and then when people do, other people are criticizing them. Good. Oh, alrighty. Anything else on the docket there, Dave?
There was another mail discussion, which was Paul Quirk commenting on the Fediverse show from Ahuka. So he's on Mastodon and said, here I am, and come and follow me and all that sort of stuff, which seemed to me a very good idea. So I'm certainly following Paul on Mastodon myself. So
oh yeah, need to do that. We should put in the social media stuff on the host profile in the fullness of time as well. That's another thing. Also, FOSDEM is coming up, and we have a table. And now I'm really, it's in January, and we kind of really need to get stuff going. I do not have any swag or anything that needs to be organized this week. Does anybody have any editing skills to take graphics of our free open source podcasts, Floss Podcasting? Anyone got any ideas or can put a logo together or something together for this? Because I need to get a banner. People, anybody? Anybody? Bueller?
Well, that's definitely not me, but I hope somebody listening says, oh yeah, that is me.
Yes, that needs to go to the mailing list today. Yeah.
Yes, I fully support it, but I don't think I could contribute anything useful.
Okay, so that was all very pleasant waste of time. Do we have anything coming up on the LWN calendar? Yes, we do. We have Kernel MiniConf in February. We have FOSDEM, and that's the most important one. How are the tags doing, Dave?
Well, the tags got no attention in December, sadly, but they just got some added today. Just because I realized I've done any of these for ages, I'll just do some today. But they missed the boat as far as this show is concerned. But
I caught somebody on IRC going back listening to all the shows from the beginning, and I asked them to do the tags, and they said they would.
I think it was raised. I think it was raised on the New Year's show. Actually, I think I'm not sure who it was. I just noticed it in the Etherpad notes. Somebody said we need tags. We're missing tags on some of the older shows. So whoever that was, thank you very much. I'll find out and thank them. But we're always in need.
What's the general sense of scale? Like how many are there yet to be covered?
Well, funny you should ask that. There are 575 shows without tags, without summaries, 543 without tags, 493 with neither summaries nor tags, and 625 that need a little bit of work.
Need a thanks, little Ken. Bit of work?
That was just the sum of, bit of work there, some Dave. Of the other ones. It's just the sum of the other ones. So, yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
So, okay. So, The Venn diagram of summaries without summaries and that of without tags overlap. So the overlap is 625, I guess. This needs updated. It will be updated shortly, adding in the four or whatever it was I just added earlier on today. But we're getting closer and closer. I mean, we'll be up to 3,000 shows before many days are out, and we've only got this relatively small number without these features. So the problem is becoming more and more manageable, smaller and smaller as time goes on. So
I also have zero ideas for episode 3000. Zero, none. I'm all out of ideas after all the celebrations that we've done. So if anyone has any idea on how to mark episode 3000, please share it with the community. That would be awesome. Or not, just contact us and we'll post the show. And if you want it to be a surprise, we can post it on the day.
I have no thoughts myself, I'm afraid. No, I'm terrible at these things. I'm not good at these things.
Yeah, no quality ideas anyways. A lot of stupid ones. I'll brainstorm.
I'll accept stupid ones. It's fine.
Oh, one word right. From each. One word snapped from each episode.
Oh, if you could do that, that would be an awful lot of work. Just going back and trying to get the WAV file of every person who's been on the show.
Yeah, that would be.
Some people don't introduce themselves.
Pretty hard to do, but yeah. Anyways. Yeah,
I have done that already, and that took me days upon days upon days. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this show. Hope it wasn't too depressing. If anyone has comments on this show or anything else that we've discussed, as I explained in the about page, we are the janitors. The policies and all that sort of stuff is done on the mailing list. So join the mailing list, post your comment, and let's hear about it and discuss it. So anyway, that's it. Tune in tomorrow even, for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio! Hooray!
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.